Hello and welcome back to the CTB show. I'm Thomas Pargnick, as always joined by Christian Catanacci. Cat, what's going on today?
I'm doing great, Puck. It's almost December. It's crazy to say that, but we're days away from December 1st, depending on when you're listening to this. But man, the season is flying by. It's sort of just like one of those. I mean, it seems like it's like this every year, right? You sort of blink and then the season's over. But I'm excited because these are the dog days. December, January, that is what the season's all about. I know October, November, it doesn't necessarily lose its mojo, but September's obviously always incredible. And then October, November sort of just gets a little stagnant. And then December, January is when it really starts to pick up. And I think we're just around the corner there. We saw a fantastic game last night with the Eagles and the Bills and a couple other pretty good games. But yeah, I'm doing great. I'm actually 27 hours into a water fast right now.
That sounds crazy. I don't know how you're doing
the
that.
The first time I've ever done it.
I would be fading away.
I'm only doing 48 hours. I'm going to end tomorrow afternoon. So hopefully by the time you guys are listening to this, I'll be munching on something. But yeah, I saw it. Just thought I'd try it. I you know what? I feel good. I thought that I would feel like dizzy, weak, hungry. I was hungry yesterday, like later, right? Like even this morning too. But now I'm sort of over it, whatever. We'll see. What it takes me. But
I don't know how you're doing that. You're just not eating.
No, I'm not eating. Only drinking water. That's why I might go through like 10 waters on this 45-minute show, but that's what we do here.
Yeah, like you said, December 1st, December's here. I think we talked about months of the year a little bit when we did our first podcast in November. And I said November is the worst month, which I stand by that. It was boring, not a lot going on. Football keeps be going through it, I gotta say, and Thanksgiving. I mean, we don't have that in Canada, but I hope everyone listening had a great Thanksgiving, all those who celebrated. But yeah, some great games this weekend. We're gonna get into the Bills, but like Texans delivered as always. They've been like one of the best watches this year to have a last second field goal go off the front bar and stay out. Crazy, crazy ending there. There's always some under the radar matchups that I think, even when it's not between playoff teams, that still stick out and build for a good Sunday. But let's get right into the marquee game, and that's obviously the Bills and the Eagles. Bit of a weird one in the sense that we did not see the best from the Eagles for the majority of the start of the game, at least. And the ref whistles once again became a big talking point and a moment of controversy. But ultimately, Jalen Hurts just showed that he was able to completely flip the switch in the second half, 4 touchdowns passing in the second half, 5 total touchdowns on the day. Just an overall very impressive win from the Eagles because they just continue to prove that they can find ways to win. And even when they're not playing their best, they can quickly claw their way back in, come back, and you honestly just blinked and it's like, bam, they're in it. They get some heroics from Jake Elliott, who had a 59-yard field goal. But I think the biggest reason why this game becomes such a talking point is from a Buffalo Bills perspective. 6-6 now, out of a playoff spot. Their bye comes at maybe the best time, but a gauntlet schedule awaits. Cat, are the Bills actually going to miss the playoffs?
I mean, look, I said it a few episodes ago, and we were talking about everyone with the Bills, like, oh, they're too talented. They're going to turn around eventually. And I said that it feels like you're just kicking the can down the road, right? And then you're going to find the same issues. You're going to see that can again. And you're just going to kick it. Hopefully that next time you get there, it's going to be, the problems are just going to erase. And the fact of the matter is, they haven't. McDermott continues to forget how to coach in the last quarter of the games. They still rely on Josh Allen to do way too much. Stephon Diggs, again, not having that guy in on a key third down, I don't get it. I'm not sure what I get that, right? Whatever. I don't know. I'm not even going to bother talking about that because it's so blasphemous. It's like you don't have your best player, your only consistent receiver, it seems like, on the field, the most important down. Tyler Bass goes out there and misses 2 chip shot field goals. It's it feels like a team that is trending now, and it's clear as day to me, they're trending in the complete opposite direction. And I know you mentioned the buys coming up. It is coming up at a good time, right? Sure. Their gauntlet schedule starts in KC against Dallas, in LA against the Chargers, at home against the Pats, and then in Miami against the Dolphins, which I might ask, I must add, they had already beaten the Dolphins in Buffalo. So typically you look to see the split there, but that's going to be a big game. And look, you want to go through these games. I already did. I sort of have it right here. I put it down this way. 10-7 is going to be the best case scenario. And that's assuming I don't think they're going to beat KC. I think KC at home, they have to just turn it around. I think KC is one of those teams that will. So 10-7 means that they're going to win every other game after that, right? That's best case scenario. 9-8 feels like maybe the more likely scenario, and 8-9 worst case scenario. But you want to talk what's going to get them into the playoffs. Unfortunately, I think the only scenario there is the best case one. Like, you look at how that AFC playoff picture is looking out. If you don't have 10 wins, you might not be playing on Wild Card weekend.
I was going to say, last year the Dolphins got in with 9 wins. And if you look at everyone else right now, not only do they have more wins than Buffalo, but we're at the point in the season now where there's only, you know, 5 or 6 games left, depending on the team. You're officially at the point where you're looking at everyone's schedule.
Yeah.
And the Bills by far have the hardest schedule of each one of those teams. The Steelers got a cupcake schedule. They're, to me, I mean, last week in our little game of in and out, maybe I didn't look at the schedules too hard. Maybe I'm also being prisoner of the moment too much of 1 week. But like, if I just look at the games ahead that the Steelers have, I feel they're going to get in. The Browns, I think their defense is going to still power them enough to get in. There's only one spot left after that. And the Texans and the Broncos play each other this week. That feels like a play-in game for the playoffs.
Yep.
Because both those teams after that have decently favorable runs. The Bills have to go through some of the best teams in the NFL. And I don't know. And for you, the best case scenario, it's weird the order that occurs in, because I think if they lose to KC, that's like coming off the bye.
Yeah, you're right. You'd almost say that's
losing 3 out of your last 4. Like that's going to hurt your momentum. I actually do think I like them to lose, to beat KC almost better than I like them to beat Dallas, which I think is weird because Dallas is
a tougher
cross conference game.
Yeah, so they got to travel a lot. It's going to be cold. Mm-hmm. Right? It's one of those games. I don't expect... Again, it's a toss-up. Like, look, I literally have a toss-up, toss-up, toss-up.
I think it's fair, too,
because I think it's a toss-up game. Right?
I don't know. At that point, it's a battle of teams that, quite frankly, just can't get the best out of their roster. And the Bills are in a really weird spot because they've shown us at their best what they can be at certain spurts of the season. They've blown out bad teams like the Commanders and the Raiders, and they beat the Dolphins by 20-plus points. Their point differential for a 6-6 team
is over 100.
Yeah, it's plus 100 and something when you got teams like the Steelers with a negative point differential that are sitting comfortably in a playoff spot right now. And it's just like, where did it go wrong for this team? And then you talk about someone like Sean McDermott, clock management. He knows best that you can win a game with 13 seconds left.
Did you see that?
With 20 seconds left. To bow down and take a knee.
With a timeout. You had a timeout.
And I get it. Jake Elliott just hit a 59-yarder. So you're thinking if any sort of turnover happens, it's tough because you lose the game right then and there. But you're also an organization that has just been terrible in overtime. I just feel like in moments like that, you need to take a risk. But also, you're playing the game of, obviously, the outcome has now happened. Now you're the villain. Everyone criticizes you. Who knows? Maybe tries to make something happen, they throw an interception, then he's also hailed as the villain. And
You're coaching scared. Like, where are you going to go coaching scared? You're going to end up like Ron Rivera. You're going to end up like one of those coaches. It's go try and win the game, right? You have one timeout. Like you mentioned, you lost the game in 13 seconds before. So, like, you know what I mean? It's for me, it's just this team was already at 6-5. Why are you going conservative for, right? to rely on a coin flip, or in that case, you scored a field goal and then they came in and scored a touchdown. I think there were so many chances for the Bills to win that game, and the fact that they didn't is incredibly concerning to me. And again, the Eagles deserve their flowers. I mean, it's not pretty the way they're winning, but they're finding ways to win games. It must be that water in Pennsylvania because the Steelers are doing the same thing,
yeah,
right? But again, if we're talking strictly Bills here and bottom line of we're asking whether or not they're going to make the playoffs, I'm a hard no right now.
Yeah, I think it's really tough. I had them in last week.
Yeah,
right?
You did.
I did. And it's crazy for me to flip after 1 week where they lost as underdogs and the Steelers won. But like I said, I've looked a lot more into the schedule and what's to come. And like you said, how they're losing, which is ultimately the most concerning part, because I feel like if you look at all the analytics and everything, they definitely deserve to win that game based on just outplaying a team, yeah, having the lead, being in control, because it did feel like the Eagles were chasing. And we never, ever see the Philadelphia Eagles chase. That was like the blueprint on how to beat them last year.
And, it was.
And no team could get them to chase, yeah, because they were so dominant and they could just run you into the ground and grind out these long drives. But they didn't do that. There were situations where they just needed to score quick and it was bang, bang, bang. And they were just, oh, the Eagles are in the lead again. And then they went down again. Oh, we're going to drive down the field, tie the game up. So I think I'm going to agree with you and say that I'm also out on the Bills making the playoffs. And if you look at the sports books, they're heavy underdogs now to even get into the playoffs. But let's talk a little bit more about the Eagles and the sports books. And let's get right into some MVP chatter. Because Jalen Hurts threw 13 weeks, and I think he has had a really, really good season. But he is not the overwhelming favorite to win MVP, but he is the clear-cut front runner right now.
Yeah, he's like plus 125, yeah, I think, on most books.
And there is a ton of controversy with that, just because if you put his, like, at the end of the day, it's a little bit unfortunate, I think, with the game of football, but everyone just boils you down to your box score at the end of the year. And if you just simply put Jalen Hurts' passing numbers and you put it right beside someone like Jordan Love, who has had such an up-and-down season and has been said, like, oh, is he the quarterback of the future? Like, there's so much doubt around a guy like him. You put their passing numbers next to each other, nearly identical. So there is a lot of controversy right now with Jalen Hurts to win the MVP. And, like, where do you stand on this whole thing?
I mean, look, in my opinion, I think the MVP at the moment is boiled down to five guys. I think it the top tier of guys, obviously you have Jalen Hurts as the front runner, but I think you got guys like Purdy, you got Lamar. I think CMC deserves to be there, right? Even though it's most likely a quarterback award. And I think Dak's played his way into that. And then you got the guys with an outside shot at it right now is like Tua, CJ Stroud, Tyreek Hill, which again, it's tough to bring up non-quarterbacks because it's just typically a quarterback-driven award. But sure, you want to give it to Hurts because his team's 10-1, so be it. But at the end of the day, the MVP, is it a team award or is it like...
Exactly,
is yeah. It depends what you define as the award. Because if it's just a stats-based award, no, it's not Hurts, right? And I think you're also seeing that a little bit from the sports books now because, look, I don't have this factual in front of me, but I feel like every single year before this, there has been one clear-cut favorite that's like in the minus 250, minus 300s entering week 13. And the fact that there isn't shows you that this is a little bit closer than I think people think. And now, has Hurts been good? Has Hurts had a good year? Yeah, 100%. Has he been one of the top five, six, seven quarterbacks in this league, in the league this year? Absolutely, right? But to say that he's like the clear-cut front runner to win MVP, I think that's pushing it a little bit. Like, he quietly has the third most interceptions in the league, right? And again, he's team's 10-1, so you're not hearing that. But like, it's, I feel you. I'm nitpicking, but when you're talking about the MVP, you are nitpicking because, again, it's a statistic-based award, at least in my opinion it is. I don't care if your team's 10-1, right? Like, you got to be putting up the best stats in the league. And is Hurts doing that? No, but he is playing at an efficient level, and he's finding ways to win games. So I'm fine with him being the front runner at the moment, but I think it's a closer race than people think.
I like the point that you brought up. Usually at this point, there is like a clear-cut front runner in the race, and we've narrowed in on one quarterback who's just doing amazing things. And it is weird because we've with fantasy sports, we've gotten into this era where the quarterback has to be the guy that's delivering every week. He has to throw for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns and doing all these amazing things. And I think the Eagles and even the Ravens, these are the two number one seeds right now in the AFC and the NFC. They've done such a great job this year of being complete football teams and winning with a great run game and a great defense. And they can win when they only score 20 points, and they can win when they score 35 points, playing complementary football. And I think that's so, so great to watch. But we've now associated winning with great quarterback play and great statistics. And I think Lamar Jackson and Jalen Hurts have both had great seasons, but they haven't been, you know, carrying this massive load for their teams. Like they play on great teams that are playing complete football games right now. And I just think, what are we doing then? If we're just every, like you said, is it now become a team war? Like, okay, we'll just give it to the quarterback on the team with the best record.
Yeah, with the best record.
Is that really what the award's all about? And you make a point how there hasn't been this clear cut best quarterback in the NFL this year. And I think at times, Tua has been really good this year. And right now, Dak is playing at such a high level. And Mahomes has had his moments. But none of them have been able to put together a stretch where they've been able to win over these narratives of they're the most valuable player. So, to me, why not give it to a non-quarterback?
Like, it feels
I feel like if Tyreek Hill has 2,000 receiving yards, I feel like he deserves to win the MVP.
Yeah, or if CMC has 20 touchdowns. Yeah. I feel like this is the perfect year at the moment. A lot can change in the last 5 weeks, but I agree with that. I think if you're going to give the award to the actual best player and not make it this quarterback on the best team award and just a boring award in general, this is the perfect year to do it. Like CMC, Tyreek Hill, you want to go on the defense side of the ball. Myles Garrett, right? Yeah. TJ Watt, right? This is a complete stretch, but there's a guy that just broke the NFL record,
don't
right?
Even like, get me started about Daron Bland in the Defensive Player of the Year award, because he broke an NFL record. He's got what, 7 interceptions on the year. He's like plus 1500 right now. He's like the fourth best odds. It's a joke.
Yeah,
if his name was Jalen Ramsey, Patrick Surtain Jr., if his name was Sauce Gardner, can you imagine the hype that this season would be getting? Yeah. But because he's a fifth round, second year guy, kind of unknown coming into the season, and it's not like he's just doing the pick sixes too. He's got the lowest passer rating allowed when targeted in the entire NFL. He's near the top of the league in PBUs. Like, this is like quietly one of the best cornerback seasons we've seen in some time. Like, better than Stephon Gilmore's season when he won Defensive Player of the Year. Again, sorry, that was like a bit of a tangent.
You're right,
because that's not about MVP. That's more about defensive player of the year.
The same, but there you go. It applies. It applies in this MVP talk because it feels like it's just sort of, it's like, oh, Myles Garrett, big name. Fantastic season, though. Deservingly so, should be up there. But it's the same thing with the MVP. It's like, okay, the Eagles are 10-1. Jalen Hurts has been playing solid. Let's just give him the award. Like, I don't know. That's boring to me. I think there's been better players. Has there been better quarterbacks? Maybe you can make the debate, but there's been better overall players. Like, I think CMC, I think Tyreek Hill has been better. I think there have been better players. Myles Garrett's been a better player. So, like, it depends what the award is, right? And unfortunately, I think the award is trending towards just a boring shoe-in quarterback on the best team award. Especially, like, look, I think if, bottom line, if the season ended today and Hurts won the award, I think that's sort of the end of the MVP being like this big, well-known award, which it's supposed to be, right? It's supposed to be the top-tier pedestal award, something that you grinded and you're putting out, and it's the most valuable, the best player in the whole entire league, right? And to me, it would be a boring pick. Now, if he goes on this crazy stretch the next 5 games and changes the narrative, yeah, sure. Then his box score suddenly looks 40 touchdowns, whatever, right? Again, there's a lot of time for this to change. But at the moment, I don't think there's clear-cut front-runner by any means.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to agree with you there. Like I said, it's just there hasn't been like a memorable, like I think back to the MVP award, 2019 Lamar was like just so dominant start to finish. All the years of like, You know, Brady had this 1 year, Manning had this 1 year, Rodgers. Like, I just feel like there hasn't been that one guy. There's been a lot of guys who have been very, very good this year and have played at a very high level. Like you said, that crop of five or six quarterbacks. But I just don't think one of them has established themselves quite enough. And then there's years where, you know, Drew Brees had not won and he threw like 45 touchdowns. And it's like, we're going to give it to a guy who just hasn't really been the clear-cut leader of the pack. I just don't think it's right.
Look, okay, I'm gonna put it this way, and we're gonna move on after this topic. Aaron Rodgers won back-to-back MVPs in 2020 and 2021, right? His stats in 2020, 48 touchdown passes, 5 picks. His stats in 2020, 48 touchdowns, 5 picks. His stats in 2021, 37 touchdowns, 4 picks. Jalen Hurts' stats through 12 weeks, 11 passing touchdowns, 10 interceptions.
I think the interceptions in general has been the biggest like deflator of all this. Like for every great quarterback this year, maybe not Dak. I feel like Dak's been a lot better with the picks.
Passer rating too, 121, 111. Hurts is 94. Like,
yeah,
right.
Brock Purdy's still leading the league in passer rating, I believe. I know Tua was up there for a long time. Tua's got to get the turnovers under control as well.
It's hard to protect the ball.
Like, and these guys are young, too. We're in this new age of quarterbacks, and I think there's going to be some transition years before we get to see, like, Aaron Rodgers was a veteran when he's just dominating at that point. So we'll see. Like I said, the league is in good hands. This isn't to say that, oh, there's no good quarterbacks in the league anymore.
No, that's not true at all. That's not what we're saying at all.
I just feel like
If you're going to give it to the best player, this is the year where
a non-quarterback should win. Absolutely. But anyways, let's get into some news now. Frank Reich was fired today, and he was actually one of the shortest tenured coaches in NFL history. The Panthers start off 1-10. Bryce Young has not looked good. Whatever. Call it what you want. Maybe Frank Reich has just been, you know, made the victim, the scapegoat.
He's been dealt some pretty bad hands.
Because you want to talk about what the Panthers have done, and now owner David Tepper looks like an absolute disaster. He's fired 3 head coaches in like 4 or 5 years of being the owner there. It just has not gone well for the Carolina Panthers, and I feel like we remind everyone every week, they don't have their pick, which looks like it's almost a lock to be the first overall selection in a year where the guys who could go at the top of the draft are pretty highly touted. It's just a disaster right now in Carolina, but we're not going to talk really much about Frank Reich and what's gone on there today. Instead, we're going to play a little game, as we do every week. This week, and the names keep getting better and better on this, and that's what I think is the real takeaway through all of this, because we are getting quite good. We got fired or inspired this week, and I'm going to give you about 10 to 12 coaches who could be on the hot seat come the end of this season, and Adam Schefter released a report today saying he could expect 7 to 10 coaching vacancies, which is crazy, because I feel like every year it's a big number, and we're like, all right, these guys are set going forward, and then the seats just start getting hot. So I'm going to give you 7 to 10, and you're going to tell me if they will be fired, or if you are still inspired by these coaches, and they will be sitting or standing on their team sidelines come week one of next season.
Sounds good.
Are you ready over here?
Yeah.
Okay. We will start off with my favorite coach in the league, Arthur Smith. Fired or inspired?
This guy's got to be fired. Got to be fired.
What
I think
they win the division? They're leading the division right now.
I will say this. I don't want to give out too much, but we could see the first time. It might be the first time in NFL history. At least I can't remember another time. But how funny would it be if the NFC South, everybody has a coaching vacancy?
I mean,
it's possible.
It is possible.
It's possible.
I actually have all three of those teams.
So go ahead.
We'll rip through the South. We'll go Dennis Allen next.
Fired.
You think he's going to be fired?
Yep.
It's hard for the Saints to restart in any way, though, with the Carr contract that they have. So I don't know. The Saints are just in a very, very weird spot as an organization right now. But yeah, I could see it as well. Todd Bowles.
I think he's going to be fired as well. I think all these teams need a new, younger, fresh, just offensive-minded head coach type of guy, or even the complete opposite. You go with an older veteran, try and rebuild your entire program, and maybe the Saints look that route, or maybe a team like Tampa Bay looks that route. I think all these every coach in the NFC South, I think, is going to be looking for a fresh new head start. Because even if you finish 8-9, what is that? You're going to get pumped in the playoffs in the first game anyway. So, like, it is what it is. But that's sort of NFC South. NFC South.
One thing I'll say about Todd Bowles, I think he has gotten his guys to overachieve a little bit this year, and I kind of do
like
him.
He's a good coach, but
the problem is it's just become such a copycat league.
Yeah, it's like,
and everyone's going to look for the next Mike McDaniel, Matt LaFleur, Kyle Shanahan, Ben Johnson. Teams are going to be just lining up out the door for this guy this offseason, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, I like Ben Johnson, but I just think everyone's going to try too hard to find the next
100%.
Quirky, fun offensive guru, and I think in a lot of cases it's not going to work. But we will move on to Bill Belichick.
I think this is a tough one.
No, come on.
No, I think he deserves to be fired, but I think it's more so like a respect thing. It's like, okay, are you going to like retire I don't think, look, I'll put it this way. I don't think Robert Kraft has it to fire him.
But you don't think there will be an under the table firing and just some sort of fun statement, not a fun statement, but some sort of well-worded endearing note from the Patriots that says we've mutually agreed to part ways.
Maybe, maybe. Okay. With that being said, yeah, sure. I think I'm not going to call it fired, but yeah. I think there'll be part. The ways will be parted.
Okay.
They won't be together. Put it that way. Next year. Sorry.
To me, the most interesting one on this list: Robert Saleh of the New York Jets.
I think as long as Rodgers is there, Saleh is safe, which in my opinion is blasphemous. I would be getting rid of Saleh because I think the way he's just handled this whole situation is completely mind-boggling. But I think as long as Rodgers is there, Robert Saleh's job is safe.
I got to say with Saleh, I'm pretty sad with this because I actually really, really love the hire. I love the guy. I still think he's a really good guy, and I think a lot of players would love to play for him. But the way this offense has looked, to me, it's not a big enough excuse that your quarterback is gone because they have just been embarrassing. And as good as Aaron Rodgers is, I don't think he's good enough to fix the massive problems I've seen. And like the way he's handling these press conferences, he never has an answer for anything. I don't know. I'm kind of out on him. Sean McDermott of the Buffalo Bills.
Again, this is one that I feel like I'm just going to go through this whole list and I'm going to say fire, but I genuinely think that the Bills missed the playoffs and McDermott's gone. And yeah, deservingly so. He's costed them a ton of games. He is years removed, just a few years removed from being like one of the best, touted as the best head coach in the league, right? And it's a shame that this is the way his career's gone, and I think he'll ultimately get another chance. But I think his time in Buffalo has definitely got some numbers to it.
Should be a quick one. Brandon Staley.
Gone. Gone. He's, like you mentioned last week, he's going to be the third co-host of this podcast. Maybe he's gone by the time you guys hear this. I don't think so, but if I was up to me, yeah, gone.
Riverboat Ron Rivera.
This is also one that's super overdue. Quick story. I was watching the game on Thursday against the Cowboys, and they had fourth and short back-to-back drives at like the 50-yard line to start the game, and he punted it. It's like, why? It's like, you know, the Cowboys are going to put up points. Like, what is that? I don't know. Riverboat Ron, great person, great story. Time in Washington was expired 3 years ago.
Yeah, honestly. Get out of here. And the coordinators continue to just be a revolving door, but he continues to stay there.
He's a cat. People want to say he's got 9 lives. He's got 400 lives.
He's got some power in that organization for sure, and I don't know who gave it to him. This one's interesting because it's a former winner of Coach of the Year, Brian Daboll.
I think he's going to be in New York next year, right? I think, again, you're also seeing this team now is playing with a little bit, again, they're not good by any means, but he just won Coach of the Year last year. The team's not that good on paper, right? He felt like last year he overachieved a ton, and this year they sort of just thought that they can roll the same roster again and get the same results, when unfortunately that's not how it works in the NFL. But I think Daboll will be the head coach of the Giants next year.
Hey, he's getting some stuff out of Tommy DeVito, and obviously a lot of this is still yet to be decided based on the last month of the season goes. But nevertheless, we will move on to Matt Eberflus in Chicago.
This is someone, I love how you brought this up, because I have Matt Eberflus's stats here with teams, again, with a winning record ultimately. So Matt Eberflus has yet to coach the Bears to a victory over a team with a winning record. He is 0-9 against his own division, and he is overall 6-22 as a head coach. Now, when this guy was in Dallas, he was a very good coordinator, very good coordinator. I know a lot of people that talked super highly of Matt Eberflus. So I'm not necessarily saying he's an awful, he doesn't belong in the NFL in general, but I think head coach is just a little bit too rich for him, right? He feels like he's lost. I get it, the Bears aren't that good, but Matt Eberflus, I think, is going to be without a head coaching job next year.
I just think regardless of what happens, the Bears are in a unique position to just hit the reset button. You're probably going to be picking first overall. You got a chance to get a new quarterback. Go get something for Justin Fields and bring in a new head coach that can you can pair with this new quarterback and just start this new era of football there. So I do like that take from you as well. I think I only got one more, and it's Jonathan Gannon, another first-time hire because... Yeah, we went through all the NFC South coaches. So, yeah, Jonathan Gannon. Hired, Jonathan fired Gannon, or inspired?
Inspired.
You're inspired.
I'm inspired by the Pews. I'm inspired by him. He has exceeded my expectations big time this year.
They're 2-11.
No, but they're playing. I'm telling you, they're a better team than they are. Their record, yeah, they're 2-11. I get it. The team's not good on paper, but I think the expectations for this Arizona Cardinals team was to be like the worst team in the history of the NFL, right? Like easy. No, they haven't. They've been battling. They're obviously they've have 11 losses, but they are in some games. I look at this team and the team knows that they're not good, right? Like it doesn't take a genius to figure that out. And I've never played for a team that's been, like in the NFL, obviously, but I've never played for a team that's bad. So like I don't know how they feel in there, but I assume it's hard to find motivation, and I still think I see motivation in that team, which is crazy to think because they do have 11 losses. So that has to be reflective of the job that Jonathan Gannon has done. And it's crazy because we both clown this guy, we clown the team. I'm inspired a little bit by Gannon. I think he's at least deserved another chance, another year with the Cardinals.
The one thing I'll ask you then with that is, do they still have Kyler Murray next year?
No, I don't think Kyler Murray's
in. So they're going to be entering the draft because they may be in prime position to just take Marvin Harrison and just say, you know, we're good. We're good at the quarterback position.
That's definitely intriguing. But I think with the state of the overall, and again, Jonathan Gannon hasn't handpicked the guy yet. So if the franchise does indeed believe in him, and even if they don't believe in him, I think if a new guy comes in or if Jonathan Gannon comes in, I think they're going to want their guy. And I don't know if Kyler Murray is that. I think Kyler Murray's a good quarterback. I think they can get something for Kyler Murray. Look at the state of just the quarterbacks around the league, and you're in a prime position to take two incredibly highly touted quarterbacking prospects. I don't know. It's interesting. I could see a scenario where both Kyler Murray is a member of the Arizona Cardinals next year and a scenario where he's not. And I can also see that same scenario with Gannon being back and Gannon not being back. But I think honestly they both sort of deserve at least maybe another one chance. But it's different because it's difficult to talk and to speculate because you say that, but if there's a Caleb Williams like just there, it's like right, it's tough. It's tough to like you never know until you you're on the clock and that quarterback is there, right? Mm-hmm.
And like we said, still a lot of time for Kyler Murray, especially because he missed a bunch of the season. He has this last month to prove himself. And December is all about getting hot at the right time. And that brings us into our last two segments because you want to talk about getting hot at the right time. Our locks powered by PointsBet, our best bets of the week, have been absolutely on fire. We picked three games last week because it was Thanksgiving. You went 3-0. I'm 2-0. My fate has yet to be decided, but I'm super confident in the Pastrnak to cover those 3 points tonight against those Chicago Bears who have never won a game against a divisional opponent. Let's get into it. I think I'm on the clock first.
Yep.
I'm now 15-9 on the season, which is a much better record than I had a couple weeks ago. I'm feeling good. I feel like your record is just right around this too.
Yeah, it's got to be something like that.
So yeah, I guess I'll get in with the first pick, and I know I just tooted our horns and said we're red hot. I'm honestly looking at the board this week, there wasn't a whole lot that I was admiring. But with that, I'm still going to go ahead and take You know what? This worked for me a couple weeks ago. The Eagles were underdogs against the Chiefs, and I just felt like this is going to be a very, very close game. They're underdogs once again against the San Francisco 49ers. I'm going to take them +2.5. I think this could very well be decided on the last kick of the game, maybe a one-point win, two-point win. Give me them to cover. I'm not saying that they'll win, but I'm going to take them against the spread.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a tough team to... Considering that they're underdogs at home, I do like the value of that play. I'm also going to stick in the NFC East. I'm going to take the Dallas Cowboys at -8.5 on Thursday Night Football. Again, the Cowboys have covered every single game that they've won. Every single game that they've been favored in, I believe.
Except for the Cardinals
game. Except for the Cardinals game, correct. So every one of their wins, they've covered the spread. And I can't believe I'm going to say this, but the average margin of victory by the Cowboys at home this season is 29 points. 29 points.
Crazy.
Teams don't even average 29 points in games this season. And the Cowboys, again, juggernaut at home, 13 straight wins at home, the longest active streak in the NFL. I'm going to take them at 8.5. I get it's a weird number because it's beyond that just one touchdown buffer. I think they win this game pretty comfortably. Geno Smith's banged up. Kenneth Walker's banged up. The Seahawks just seem to be trending in the wrong direction. Give me the Cowboys. Give me the 8.5. I think they cover that and win by about 10 to 14 points.
Who knows? Maybe it's 30. Maybe it's again. More. You just love your Thursday Night Footballs again.
Yeah, I do. It seems to be a trend.
Fourth straight week in a row, you're taking a TNF game. And I've been avoiding those all season long. I'm going to head over to a bit of a bounce back spot. The Detroit Lions just did not have their best showing on Thanksgiving. I think Jared Goff's going to bounce back. He's been playing some real sloppy football the last 2 weeks. They're 4-point favorites on the road against a tough New Orleans defense. But this New Orleans offense is just such a disaster that I think the Lions will be able to win this one comfortably. I like them to win by a touchdown, so I'm going to take them -4. Once again, that's versus the New Orleans Saints. So lock that in.
I'm taking the Rams here. Again, I don't like the number 4.5, but it's more so I'm betting on the fact that Myles Garrett is going to be, if he even plays, he's going to be very limited. I have my doubts. I think he's going to be rested. Again, the Browns have games to play with. They don't want to get too cute, but he's your best player. Rest him maybe. Don't bother making him play through a shoulder injury for a meaningless out-of-conference game, I feel like. So give me the Rams at home, 4.5. Kieran Williams, again, I can't talk about... I don't think there's a story or a player going more under the radar than Kieran Williams. Like, I get it, he's missed the last 5-6 weeks, but when this guy's on the field, he continues to put up numbers, and he seems to just given this offense another jolt, and he is clearly the piece that they've been missing over this stretch when he was sidelined. Give me Kieran Williams. Give me the Rams. -4.5. Lock it in. Those are our best bets for week 13, powered by PointsBet. Use code BLITZ when you're signing up. And keep telling us because we're hot.
We are hot.
We are very, very hot. And another thing we're extremely hot on.
Not me.
Pac, not so much. But our starts and sits powered by our friends over at Didit. Again, Didit is a fantastic app for those that are looking for fantasy football help. How often do you go on the internet and you're reading just a boring old blog that doesn't tailor to your team or your specific needs? Nope, Didit will change that for you. You can talk one-on-one with myself and many other fantasy football experts and just ask them questions about your team, whether that starts, sits, trade advice. The playoffs are right around the corner, so why not download the Didit app? The first call is free. You can chat with myself, chat with other experts, and get your fantasy team primed for the football playoffs.
Yeah, I mentioned that I'm not too red hot in this segment. I put all my eggs in one basket last week. I got sucked into the media reports, told everyone to start Jalen Warren, and my sit was Najee Harris. Najee Harris had maybe the best game of his career. He had over 100 yards and a touchdown. Jalen Warren, still a good player, just wasn't as effective. He'll have his time.
Yeah,
don't worry. I'm still buying into the stock of Jalen Warren going forward. But if you aren't surprised, I've completely avoided Pittsburgh Steelers altogether this week in my start and sits. Would you like to get us started off, or would you like me to hop into it?
Sure, I could go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'll go with the start. My start's going to be Nico Collins. Again, ooh, all the hype is around Tank Dell. Deservingly so, been fantastic, a rookie sensation down in Houston. But Nico Collins has quietly been out targeting him over the last 2 weeks. He saw more targets than Tank Dell last week and more Tank Dell targets than Tank Dell the week before. Again, both these guys are must starts going forward. I think with CJ Stroud, it makes them both extremely fantasy relevant and top 12 to 15 plays weekly. But give me Nico Collins. Even though they got Denver, they got Patrick Surtain, they got that tough defense, I think there's going to be too much for Denver to handle, and I think Nico Collins is going to capitalize on his opportunities in the red zone. Look for him to score a touchdown, maybe even two if we're getting bold. Give me Nico Collins as a start on this week.
I like it, and I'm going way off the board this week because it's very uncharacteristic for me to pick a guy on a terrible team in a bad offense. And this is a guy that you probably drafted pretty high and has just not delivered all season long. But he's quietly had an uptick in performance the last 3 weeks. And he's got a great matchup. Ramondre Stevenson of the New England Patriots going up against that brutal Chargers run defense. And if you look at the last three games for Ramondre Stevenson, he's over 85 yards in three straight. His last two, he's had more than 20 rushing attempts. Mac Jones has been terrible. Probably won't even play. Bailey Zappe is the equivalent of Mac Jones, if not worse. The Patriots are going to need to lean on this rushing attack in a game that I think they're going to be in. And if they can control the clock, the Chargers are going to have a very, very hard time beating them, as crazy as that sounds. So I actually really, really like the matchup for Ramondre Stevenson this week. Get him in your lineup. That's a start.
I like that start, Puck. I like that start. My sit, I'm going with another guy, a very good player on a bad football team, and that is Breece Hall. It's a shame because he is such a good running back. Like, I feel like if this guy was on a good team, he would just be popping off every single week. But with Tim Boyle back there, defenses don't really have much to look at except for Breece Hall. So look for him to be sort of wrapped up and game planned against. I don't think Breece Hall is going to be anything special, unfortunately, for the rest of the year. But specifically this week, sit Breece Hall. I'm not starting him.
You can't argue with that, especially when you look at Robert Saleh's comments about Breece Hall after the game. He's the only guy who's doing anything for this offense, and Saleh's kind of criticizing him that he's, you know, trying for the home run a little too much and not committing to those tough, grimy yards, which must be a nightmare to hear as a New York Jet running back when your offense and your quarterback's producing less than a touchdown on average per game this season, which is just terrible. My sit, and it's, again, a little bit off the board because Christian Watson has been red hot recently, and he's looked like the guy that everyone drafted him to be. And while the uptick in his usage and this newfound role as a true wide receiver one in this offense is giving me a lot of confidence, and if you have him for the playoff run, great. He's going to be very useful. The matchup this week, though, is very tough in my eyes because this duo of cornerbacks for the Chiefs and Trent McDuffie and L'Jarius Sneed has just been one of the best, you know, cornerback duos in the entire NFL this year. They've locked down so many star receivers. And I think Christian Watson could come back down to earth a little bit. So I wouldn't veer away from him completely because obviously if you don't have a better option, you still got to roll with him. But I would just more so approach with caution. If there's someone comparable to his level, I would probably sway in that direction just because of matchup.
Yeah, I like how you brought up that Kansas City defense because I genuinely feel like that's one of the most underappreciated defenses in the whole league. Like, it might be the best defense in the AFC.
They've been top five this year in the entire NFL for sure.
Usually, it's typically the KC offense that's just putting up numbers, but if it wasn't for that defense, this KC record would look much different.
If they had this defense when they had Tyreek Hill and a little bit of a better receiving core than they do now, and it's not just Travis Kelce.
They wouldn't lose a game.
Exactly. They wouldn't lose a game.
I agree
because
firmly with that.
In Mahomes' best years, the defense was terrible.
Awful.
And maybe his numbers could have been a little inflated because he was consistently having to score. But even now, like, there are games where he has to score, and he's not doing it.
Yeah, it's tough to do it when you got Marquez Valdez-Scantling dropping passes that I make every Sunday, by the way. VTFL highlight tape. I should drop it because, I mean, KC, you want to sign a receiver? I'm free. I play for the vet men. I'll play for below the vet men. I'll play for $0 just to show you that I got better hands than Marquez Valdez-Scantling. But that wraps up our start and sit powered by our friends over at Did It. Again, download the app. First call's free. Chat with myself, chat with other experts. And that's going to wrap up the whole show, Pac. Again, yeah, another successful show. Week 13 is on the horizon. November 28th is when you guys will be listening to this show. Vikings, Bears tonight. I don't really necessarily have any strong opinions on it. I hope the Vikings come in for Pac's lock so we can go undefeated.
And I need 12 fantasy points.
I also need DJ Moore to get 12 fantasy points.
Nice high scoring game.
So 12 is our lucky number. DJ Moore's number 12. Addison's number 3. You can go 3-0 in our locks. 4 is 12. I can go 3-0 in my locks. The stars are aligning. We're talking here. We'll see you guys next Tuesday. And enjoy tonight's game.
Later.